listening to Arkansas Prep Extra, powered by Scorebook Live, a podcast exclusively for high school sports in Arkansas. Here are your hosts, Nate Olson and Kyle Sutherland.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us on episode 114 of Arkansas Prep Extra, powered by SB Live Sports. My name's Kyle Sutherland, alongside Nate Olson. I want to go ahead and just tell everyone, if you're watching the video and you see me just kind of moving around a lot today, I have a terrible back, and it's just not doing well this morning, and this, I guess, as we get into this afternoon, so I just wanted to let everybody know that in advance. But Nate, here we are finishing up basketball, and what a great weekend it was. We had some blowouts, but we had some really good games, probably about three or four in particular that really stood out to me. But always a fun weekend at Bank OZK Arena. That's one of my favorite places to go. It's just really cool to be right there in front of the action courtside. And also, too, they've got some pretty dang good food there. We had some good barbecue and Chick-fil-A a couple times. So fun 3 days there, even though I was only there for one of them.
Yeah, me too. The evening session on Friday, and our intern really enjoyed that barbecue spread. And he went back a couple different times. My son, JD. But yeah, it was great atmosphere. You know, obviously the state football championships, you know, spread out over a couple weeks are great there in the early winter. But I would, you know, the wrestling tournament's very underrated too at Jack Stevens Center. Yeah. But I would contend that the weekend of champions is very nice at UCA. There's some really good state champions. We do a good job in Arkansas putting these on and having the right venues. And there's arguments about those venues and things, but I really think they've done a good job of matching sports with good places. But Hot Springs, Bank OZK Arena, you compare that from around the country with where people have games, and some of them are in NBA arenas and college arenas, but that arena there with a 6,000 capacity, I believe it is very good. The acoustics in there, it was so loud on Friday night during the Central, the two games they won, and the hospitality there is really second to none. So it's one of my favorite events to cover. 3 days and 12 games, you know, that Thursday through Saturday is a lot. And I know the people that worked at that are there all three of those days. Media support staff are exhausted by the end of it, but it's really well done. And, you know, there probably weren't as many good games as people would like, you know, that are just casual observers, because you like those. You don't have a dog in the hunt. You like the good, close games at the end. But there were enough good ones that I think it did appease people. And we had some good storylines with Central winning two championships and things like that. So it was fun. And now we cruise into the spring. This will be the last basketball show we have. And then we'll be softball and baseball.
Which we've got some softball and baseball episodes out this week, so be sure to check out those if you're a spring sports fan. But for now, we will get into the action. And you mentioned Little Rock Central a second ago. We'll start there at the top with the 6A girls. Little Rock Central won their first ever state championship, 58-40. Now, one thing I wanted to clear up in this, there were quite a few people that I had heard over the weekend say, how in the world did they just now get their first championship when that school dates back to like the early 1900s or whatever it is? They've only been playing women's basketball for about 45 or so years. So still a pretty long time, but I say that to say, it's not like that they were playing back in the 30s and 40s and stuff like that. So yeah, it's not as long of a history as the boys are, but I did not realize, I've watched these two teams play. I believe it was on the Conway Corporation when it was at their place, at Buzz Boulding Arena. I knew that Conway was not a very big team. Coach Hutchcraft had talked about that, how especially losing Savannah Scott, they lost that really big presence there in the middle, but they just don't have a lot of height. And they make that up with, you know, great defense, and they've got some good shooters and all that good stuff. I did not realize until I saw it in person, the height difference. Of course, Jordan Marshall's over 6 foot. Aven Sasser's over 6 foot. There's a few others in there, but it was definitely different. And of course, they won the rebounding battle. Central did. And now when they out-rebounded them 49-29. But, you know, this is, I think, Nate, you know, Conway has been a great program for many, many years now. And I think this is probably one of the better coaching jobs that Ashley Hutchcraft and her staff did. And again, they've got plenty of talent. I'm not taking anything away from that. But the high, anybody that didn't see that in person, you might have seen it on TV. Like I said, I never caught it before, but the height discrepancy was definitely there. And I know another, and I'll say this and let you go. I know that one of the big storylines in this one was the 2022 upset that Central had over Conway. And look, there was, I had some people reach out to me about it saying, hey, we're just beating that into the ground, beating a dead horse and all this stuff. I beg to differ on that. I think that that 2022 loss is extremely relevant to this game, to what this game was. Now, it's not relevant really here moving forward now that this 2024 class has graduated. But Jordan Marshall, Avan Sasser, there were multiple of those sophomores who beat Conway that year. Now, Conway did throttle them last year. And that's the thing, too, is we've also acknowledged that Conway owns this series. But that 2022 game certainly holds some relevance. And I say that because it's one of those deals to where, again, many of those girls were contributors on that team. And then they beat Conway for their first ever state championship in their last prep basketball game. So I get it. Talking about two years ago, or really over 2 years ago at this point, but I completely disagree that it didn't have any relevance to this game.
I agree with you. I mean, a lot of relevance when you consider that so many of those kids on this team were sophomores back then. And to me, I've told you before, I think it's one of the biggest upsets all time in Arkansas prep sports history. I mean, you're going to talk about it. I think that's something that Coach Hutchcraft will probably talk about every year in a tournament setting, that happened. It can happen regardless of what you do. It was a crowning achievement of their program. You could almost say that maybe that's something that paved the way for the next couple of years. I mean, yeah, I know last year they didn't, they lost, but I mean, I think that probably if you talk to those seniors, Jordan Marshall and some of them, they look at that as a growing experience to where they kind of started to get that mindset that you need to have to be very competitive and shake off things and do well in the tournament. And 2 years later, it paid off. The thing I'll say about Conway is, now you look at these great basketball programs and the women's, it was Tennessee and UConn, and basketball and men's, it was Duke, North Carolina. Sometimes they made the tournament or made it the Final Four when they weren't exactly the best that they'd had, if they ranked their teams, maybe they're not, they make the Final Four, but they're not one of the better Final Four teams that Roy Williams had, or Pat Summitt had. But when you are so good and you have a program like that, you're winning is habitual. So I think that's kind of one of those things here. They made the championship, and she is at a point now where they're going to make deep runs, a lot of years, even if they don't have as good a team as they've had before or anything like that, or they're a little inexperienced because of how she coaches, that aura that is around their program. North Little Rock's another one of those programs in high school. So is Northside. You've seen them, maybe not have as good a team as they've had before, but they get in the state finals because they've turned it on during the tournament. Something we thought maybe Wes Swift would be able to do this year with Jonesboro boys. And that didn't quite happen, but it could have. And so hats off to her, but in that program, because it is dominant. It's a great program, one of the better programs in women's basketball. But you've got to really give a lot of credit to Central to when you haven't won big and never won a tournament, a state championship, and then to do it is really great. It's a lot of credit to them for getting it done.
And just going through some of the stats here, and I talked about the rebounding battle, how Central won that by 20. And when you aren't able to get much inside, you've definitely got to hit shots on the perimeter. That goes without saying, right? Well, Conway shot 20% from the field. So certainly just really struggled there. What's crazy is Central had 25 turnovers to Conway. So Conway took pretty good care of the ball. Now, some of the turnovers, like in that regard, you got to kind of take with a grain of salt, maybe get slapped out of somebody's hand and then they steal it back or something of that nature. But really, other than that, now free throws, I saw the Tiger and I thought of Bentonville. Central had 95% that they shot from the free throw line compared to Conway's 64%. So that was kind of some of the main discrepancies as far as the team stats. Jordan Marshall, she was named the state tournament MVP. I still get confused because I've had some people, Nate, tell me that this is the state tournament MVP, which is what I think it actually is, but I've also heard it comes from the state finals game. But either way, Jordan Marshall had another great game. She's had a great state tournament. I would say certainly she is, without question, the state tournament's MVP. Was just shy of a double-double, 9 points and 12 rebounds, along with four blocks. Also, Olivia Montgomery was really good in that one. She led all scorers with 19. And then on the other side, Alexis Cox led Conway with 14 points, and then Emery Bohannon had 12. And I believe there was actually, if I'm not mistaken, Taylor Day Davis. She did not have a double-double. I was thinking she did. She had 8 points, 13 rebounds. But again, Nate, you just look at the box score here. It doesn't always tell the story. But then I think you look at just the rebounds, 49 to 29, and you look at Conway shooting 20%. I think that tells a good bit of it right there.
They were very physical and intense. And, you know, if Conway ever had a thought of trying to get back in the game, they always shut the door on them. I mean, they just, they were girls on a mission, and just very physical, intense defense. Nothing came easy for Conway. They looked like the veteran team. They looked real comfortable, you know, in the spotlight, and just, you just got to give them the coaching staff a ton of kudos for doing it. And they outplayed them, and they were ready for it. And I think defense is really big, and they played great defense and imposed their will inside. You know, they took advantage of that. Like you said, that was a good observation. They've had some real physical young ladies in there, and they were able to control the paint. When you play good defense, control the paint, the boards, a lot of times you're going to win those games.
Down in Class 5A, this one actually surprised me a little bit. I'm not surprised that Greenwood three-peated. Look, they've been just the queens of Class 5A, again, for the last 3 years since they won their first one of this three-peat. And I think probably the biggest shocker to me was that it wasn't more competitive. I felt like this Valonia squad that was much healthier, I mean, they were just completely banged up. I think you look at just about every player, they were really hurt coming into last year's game, gutted through it. But it really, I mean, Nate, frankly, it wasn't competitive. Valonia shot pretty well. They shot over 40% from the field. They had six more turnovers than Greenwood did. They were just four shy of matching them in rebounds. I mean, you look at this is kind of one that maybe the box score doesn't quite tell the story. You look at Sydney Middleton. She was the leading scorer, their outstanding junior. She was the leading scorer in the game with 24 points. Still lost the game just because of a complete performance that Greenwood had. Of course, Anna Trusty, who's been one of the best in the state over the last few years, been a big part of all three of those state tournament teams dating back to 2022. She finished was named the tournament MVP, 18 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 assists in the game. Brooklyn Woolsey led the Lady Bulldogs with 21 points, also had 5 rebounds and 2 steals. And then Kyla Piercy, who's one to watch over the next couple of years, she had 18 points on 8 of 10 shooting. So really good. You know, and I want to point out too, this will be the last time we talk about this 24 class. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Carly Sexton. Look, she only had 6 points in the game. She was 3 of 7 shooting, had 6 rebounds. You know, her stats aren't going to jump up. She would have some of those good games, but her stats most of the time are not going to jump off the sheet at you. But during halftime, I went and got a ice cream sandwich. I was talking to Tim Terry, their voice of the Bulldogs, and we were like, where would this team be if it weren't for Carly Sexton? He mentioned it, I think he said on his broadcast. She hit that 3 against West Memphis, remember, in the 22 state – or in the semifinals. And – I think that was actually the quarterfinals that led to them playing Marion in the semis. But where would West Memphis had that game won, and that was the only 3 points that she had of that game. So to think about where this team would be, not just again this year and last year, but where would this dynasty, would there even be a dynasty if she doesn't hit that 3-pointer?
Yeah. they just are loaded with so much talent that then they keep reloading it. But, you know, one thing that really stuck out to me in the post game interview on Arkansas PBS with Clay Reeves, the Greenwood coach, the legend, he said, You know, we played them earlier in the year and they beat us. And, you know, we watched that tape and he said, I didn't even really need to do any coaching. You know, I played the tape. We watched it. Immediately, our kids knew what we need to do. You know, when you are playing a very good coach and a well-coached team like that, it's probably one of the worst things you can do have played them earlier in the year and beat them, because they can take that. They have something to look at and they can say, you know what, if we did X, Y, and Z better, we'll win the game. And he said after that film session, he knew they were going to win because they knew exactly what they had done wrong. It was correctable stuff. And he said they didn't even have to dissect it. They just kind of rolled it. And the kids took to it. They were smart enough and well coached enough that they said, yeah, you know what? We didn't do well here in this facet. We didn't play good help side defense or whatever. And got into the gym and had a couple good practices, and then they're ready for them. And, you know, you've seen that with football. You know, you've got some of those tacticians like Kevin Kelly, and you've got Buck James that they can watch some tape of what you did. You play somebody and then you play them again. That's happened a couple different times in state championship games in football where they have some kind of reference point. I think it's something that Eric Musselman does really well too, of facing somebody and then coming back and switching some things around and X's and O's. But Clay Reeves, as good as they come, those girls are so well coached and trained and they're talented. And, you know, that, I think that was just a classic case of, you know, that Valonia got them and then they were able to regroup. They had plenty of time to prepare for them and they were ready. They were ready for them. They lowered the boom on them. And I think we all thought it was going to be a much closer game. Like you said, you're not ever surprised if Greenwood wins a state title, but the way they did it, they were just very well prepared for that ball game. You could tell it.
Then these next two that we're going to talk about, 3A and 4A, we'll start with 4A, of course. These were, for the most part, not very competitive games either. Now, Morrilton, they lost to Farmington last year in the semifinals, and then they lost to them, obviously, a couple of months ago or about a month ago in the regional final, the 4A North Regional Final. But, hey, you got to give your props to Morrilton. That was pretty much what we had said last week. Are they going to be able to really just keep up with the intensity of Farmington? Because nobody's been able to do it this year other than Duncanville, Texas, that's ranked like in the top 10 in the country. But Morrilton did. They hung with them at least until, I mean, they hung with them a lot longer than many have. And I know this might sound, you know, it's like we're trying to dig as far as we can just to try and positive vibes. But, I mean, the fact that they hung with them almost halfway through the second quarter, I mean, they were matching them pretty much on everything. I feel like that's, you know, not a win or anything, but I think that that's definitely something to build off of. Of course, you know, you are going to lose Jennifer Hartman. You are going to lose Jonna Brockman if you're Morrilton. But this Farmington team, Nate, even though they're going to 5A, they're not going anywhere. Zoe Brashears just absolutely imposed her will, especially at the beginning. She ended up, Zoe did, where's her, with 11 points and then 6 rebounds, 2 blocks, and then 2 steals. So she was really just making a difference there, especially in that first quarter. I mean, a lot of her production came then. She really imposed her will. Reese Shirey, she wrapped up a brilliant career getting the 4A state tournament MVP, 15 points, 8 rebounds, and is loading 4 assists, and then also a steal in the finals game. And also, Marin Adams was in. Marin Adams and, yeah, I already had Zoe Brashears. So Marin Adams, who was scored 22 points in this game last year in the state finals, she finished with 11 points as well. And then Morrilton only had one double-digit score, and that was Aubrey Henderson with 10. So really just not much to say, Nate. You know, for a little bit, it was Farmington just wasn't able to get over that hump. You know, they shared it in 20, lost to Harrison 21, lost to Nashville on that last second three in 22. But really, ever since they lost that game in 2022, I mean, they have just been an unstoppable force.
Yeah, a couple things. One, 18-14 with about 4:35 to go in the half. If you're Morrilton, you're right where you want to be. You're knocking on the door and you're 4 minutes away from going into halftime in the ball game. But in the blink of an eye, Farmington goes on a 14-0 run to end the half. It's vintage Farmington. And even though that game wasn't close, it was entertaining if you weren't a Morrilton fan, to see how Farmington operates. And I think what they really proved there in that 4 minutes and then into the second half was why they're the number one team in Arkansas and the SB Live Power 25, because they are deep, talented, and lethal. And to be able to go on a run like that before the half, when they hadn't really been playing too well for the first quarter and a half, but you saw how explosive they are. They turned it on, got some fast break points. Shiree leading the charge at the point guard. And Brashear stepping out at 6'1", knocking down a couple triples. I mean, it was a showcase of how good that program is, because Morrilton comes into the ballgame like with two losses. So and a lengthy winning streak. They're not chopped liver. And some really good players on their team, the inside player. And Farmington just dismantled them in that 4 minutes. And then that was just like the death blow. You know, Morrilton couldn't get up off the canvas after that. But, you know, they came out and they were not intimidated and they took it right at them and they played with them. But, I mean, a good team like that that has that many weapons, 14 points in 4 minutes and the game's over.
And Casey McCumber comes off the bench and she starts at multiple schools in Arkansas. Yeah, she's really good.
Yeah, McCumber was impressive. You know, Adams, I mean, they can all play. There's length there, there's quickness, talent, you know, and Brad Johnson is a great coach. You know, not only do they have, kind of like with Greenwood, you know, not only do they have depth and talent, but they've got a coach pulling the strings that knows what he's doing and knows how to get all those kids to play well. And, you know, the one thing that you have that you can have problems with when you have that much talent is getting everybody the ball. But when you've got a player like Shiree, who is that distributor like her mom was, being able to get people the ball where they want it, and then you've got, you know, Brashear stepping out and wide open and you find her for a couple of threes. You don't expect a 6-foot post player to be knocking down triples like that. And that you can tell they're unselfish and they play together. And that goes a lot from, you know, the coaching staff is to manage all that and make sure everybody's happy. And it also is a testament to those kids' character that they care more about winning. McCumber, like you said, could transfer somewhere else, be a star. She wants to be the sixth person on a championship dominating ball club. I think too that it would be appropriate for them to at least get votes in the national rankings.
I agree. I was telling people that all weekend.
Say that right now. I think this is a nationally ranked ball club, a team that took the 6A champs, Duncanville, into the fourth quarter, lose by 10. The disparity in enrollment there is big. That's a big Dallas school. We're talking about Farmington is Northwest Arkansas, smaller school. And they're growing, and they're going up to 5A. But there's not a comparison between Northwest Arkansas and the Dallas Metroplex. Duncanville is one of the best athletic programs in the country, any sport, everything. So to compete with them was big. And you know, we'll see how that all shakes out. But definitely if there's regional rankings, Farmington's in there. There's no question about that. I think they've got to be. But a national ranking, they deserve it. They've played good competition. And they're our number one team for a reason. I think that was a good pick. And I don't know if everybody would pick that, but I think it's very fitting to do that.
And down in Class 3A, really the story of this one, the 2020, coming into this game at least, defending champion Salem, they couldn't coordinate. I mean, I don't even like to say they couldn't score, because they got some pretty good looks, but there was just a lid on the rim. And after the first quarter, they were shooting around 15-16%. I'm like, okay, I'm not really going to buy into this too much. I've seen it before. You know, team gets, regardless of whether they're returning champions or not, sometimes the lights are a little bit too bright at the beginning, but I don't even think that's what it was. I don't think that the lights were too bright. I truly believe that it was just a unlucky shooting day. And I don't want to take anything away from Bergman. Bergman played outstanding defense, as they have all season. They've been in our top 25 rankings overall for a reason. And again, they played smothering defense. I mean, they did a great job, as they again have done all season, but just the lid was on the rim for Salem. 21% from the field, 13% from three, Shot really well from the free throw line, 6 of 8 shooting there. Bergman had more turnovers than them. Of course, Bergman did win the rebounding battle, but that's just really what it came down to. There were some pretty good looks. I know it was a really, really frustrating final game for a great player, a very established player like Marley Sellers at Salem that's going to go play at Arkansas Tech. But, yeah, just a tough day all the way around. Sellers was the only one for Salem that was in double figures. I mean, she was 4 of 24 shooting. Finished with 12 points and then 8 rebounds and then also 2 assists. And then on the Bergman side, Ruby Trammell, who was the 3A state tournament MVP. Now, again, it was for the state tournament, but she had 5 points and then 6 rebounds in the game along with 2 assists. And then also in double figures, Taryn Holt, who had I don't know if she's related to Maddie Holt or not, that scored over 3,000 points for Bergman, but she had a massive game. She's kind of been that I guess you could say an unheralded player, at least in terms of coming into this season. That's kind of been the cog that's really made this thing go for Bergman per coach James Halitzka. And so she led with 15 points, and then Kirsten Lowry had 10 points. So Bergman, they get their second state title in the past 3 years, went 43-0 a couple of years ago. But I think, again, you know, you got to certainly tip your hat to Bergman for the defense that they played and what they did scoring over 50 points. But it's just, I know that Salem, they'd really love to have this one back just because they did not have a good shooting day.
Yeah, you know, and they were smothered Sellers. She had a hard time, you know, you said 4 for 23. Bergman played great defense, and they just had a real difficult time. They shot very low percentage. And sometimes it's not your day, and sometimes you run into a defense that has a good scheme. And then Bergman was firing on all cylinders offensively, making some outside shots, and it was a recipe for disaster for Salem. But you know, Bergman, a great program in their own right, you know, 2 years ago, undefeated, and they win it again, you know, a year later or 2 years later. So you know, great job by them. I think both of those teams have a chance to be good again. I mean, they've got a good tradition. So not a great day for Salem, but I think they'll be back.
And one of the better games, I would say definitely the best girls game of the weekend for sure. Mount Vernon Enola takes down Mansfield 50-44. Now, the question coming into this week, Nate, was, I mean, everybody knew that Mansfield starting five, they could go with Mount Vernon Enola starting five. They're undefeated as well for a reason. Of course, Mount Vernon Enola came in with a 46-game win streak dating back to last year, but Mansfield stayed with them the whole way. Mount Vernon Enola, like there was definitely some runs for both sides, as there is in every game. There were 5 ties, there were 3 lead changes. Of course, Mount Vernon Enola spent 19 minutes in the lead, and then of course ended up with it. It was a really wild ending, and Coach Adam Carlton had talked about it. It seems like even in both the PBS press conference and the press conference he did with the other media, that he wasn't quite sure how to really answer what that final play or one of those final plays was about. At least it led to the final bucket. So they were trying to get Marley Raby the ball, and basically everybody, including so Mansfield and MVE, everybody got confused. She gets the ball, and then she basically she didn't go uncontested for the layup. There was a Mansfield player, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I want to say it was number 4, which was I can't remember. Triska, I believe, was her last name. But nonetheless, she was the one that was there, was pretty much trailing Marley, but she gets that final bucket. That's essentially what put it away. But you got to give it to Mansfield, Nate, just because that had kind of been the narrative all week, spun by us, spun by others, that were they going to be able to keep up with MVE's depth. And I think the only Mount Vernon and Olaf, I think they only played like 7. They play anywhere from 8 to 9. They're kind of known to do that. But Mansfield, they kept their starting 5. They are, you know, Coach Bowman, he's got them in shape. And, of course, you're in basketball shape if you make it to this point in the year. But you still, again, yeah, you got to give it to Mansfield. They were certainly, by most people's standard, I would say the overwhelming, not overwhelming, but definitely the underdog. And they hung right there with them. And 2 of the biggest keys of the game was the post play. You look at Desi McCarty, who won last year's state tournament MVP. She finished with a double-double. She had a double-double in the first half. 20 points, 16 rebounds, 6 assists, and then two steals. So we had a really big game there. She was playing with four fouls a lot of the time too, like really early in the fourth quarter. And then also Marley Raby, who did win this year's state tournament MVP, 12 points and then five rebounds, and then along with three steals. I believe she had, yeah, also five assists as well. So really filled out the stat sheet. Then on the other side for Mansfield, Kaylee Ward, the sophomore phenom, also had a double-double, 17 points, 12 rebounds, along with five blocks. Allison Edwards, the Nebraska-Omaha softball commit, 11 points, seven rebounds, eight assists. And then last but not least, Kinsley Ward, 10 points, and then also had two rebounds to go with that. So, I mean, again, Nate, really kind of the story in this one was just kind of back and forth. It was really close the whole time. Then right there at the end, you know, there was a couple of turnovers. There was that miscommunication really between both teams where Raby put that last layup in. And I know that there's definitely some, particularly there, maybe in the last two or three minutes that Mansfield really would like to have back.
Yeah. Yeah. And when, you know, MVE, such a good team, doesn't panic at the end and kind of puts the pressure on Mansfield, goes back and forth. And I'm not saying that Mansfield couldn't handle it, but I think, you know, MVE kept the poise and composure and, you know, was able to handle that stress at the end. But that was it was a good game, by far the best girls game, I think, at all, for sure. And you saw some good athletes on Mansfield. Edwards, I mean, a three-sport star and a chance to play in another championship game. I know that's something that she wanted to win, but a great accomplishment for her, 1,000-point score in basketball. Well-coached, good team, and almost got the mild upset, but almost pulled it off.
And in Class 1A, we had a part three between Mammoth Spring and Norfolk. Norfolk won in 22. Mammoth won last year, and then Mammoth won this year between two heralded senior classes. And really, it was pretty close. It was 18, actually tied at 18, if I'm not mistaken, but around the same score when we got into halftime. And then really the third quarter, now Norfolk had a really good fourth quarter, but really kind of that the back end of that second and into the third quarter was really what kind of helped Mammoth run away with it. I know Keeley Blanchard, the North Arkansas College signee from the four-year starter from Norfolk, she had to sit on the bench right there at the kind of towards, I think it was like around the 3 to 4 minute mark of the first half, just because she got to three fouls. But she led the Lady Panthers in scoring 16 points. Let me go to this full deal here. 16 points. Where did that go? I don't know. It might help if I get on Norfolk. 16 points, three rebounds, and then also had five steals. Kate Shaddy, the freshman, they're going to be one of the up-and-comers to watch moving forward over the next few years for Norfolk. 15 points, six rebounds, and also had a steal. Then over on the Mammoth Spring side, Bryn Washam, they really, I mentioned this in the game recap, just a brilliant career of the senior trio careers between Bryn Washam, Tay Davis, and Adriana Corbett. Washam was again the 1A state tournament MVP with 22 points. She was 7 of 7 from the free throw line, also five rebounds, three steals. Tay Davis, 17 points, 7 of 10 shooting from the field, nine rebounds, and then also two steals. Adriana Corbett, 12 points on 4 of 9 shooting, had five rebounds, and also, yeah, five rebounds. So, again, just I don't know, Nate, until next year how much both of these two teams are losing. We had a great chance to watch both of these again. Senior, when you think about Liza Shaddy, Keeley Blanchard for Norfolk, and then that trio that I just mentioned for Mammoth Spring. Mammoth Spring also moving up to 2A next year. So not to say that either team can't get back to this point, but it you got to think that there might be a couple of other teams, especially with Mammoth going to 2A, Norfolk losing two of their top players. Again, I expect both to still be contenders, but that's going to open up a lot for both, especially Class 1A with Mammoth moving up.
Yeah, no question. It's going to be – going to be interesting how Mammoth does that. They've been really competitive, you know. Obviously, moving up a class is a whole different thing, though, sometimes.
And then in Class 6A over on the boys' side, man, what a game this was. And we knew it would be. These two teams played twice in the regular season conference series. Of course, Bryant took both of those by a total of 5 points. And that was something that Central was using as motivation. They knew that, and Coach, I loved what Coach Ross said after the game. Of course, the question came for both Coach A and Coach Ross about how are you prep for a team when you play them for the third time, because it's hard to beat a team three times. And both kind of alluded to the fact, look, it's hard to beat a team one time. And also, whenever it gets to the point of you're playing a third time, it really just comes down to your players. You can only watch so much film. You can only psych yourself up so much. But Little Rock Central, 65. You know what I just realized? I don't even think I've been saying, of course, I think I've just been saying the winners. But Little Rock Central, 63-55 over Bryant to get their first state, their first undisputed state championship since 1999. Now, they did split it in Conway, or split it with Conway during the 20 season, but no surprise here. Honor Boateng gets 6A state tournament MVP honors, 14 points, 10 rebounds, so put up a double-double there. Also had a block in the game. CJ, so there was four players in double digits. CJ Washington scored 11. Also, D. Culberson had 19. And then Luke Moore, their outstanding point guard, had 15. But Nate, the hero of the game, Chase Allen, who, if I heard Coach Ross right, Chase Allen hardly played last year, had a great offseason, and then really worked his way into the mix. He only had 5 points in the game, but those two that he had on that contested bucket that he ended up getting an and one that was really the game winner. Again, it was contested. If I'm not mistaken, it was double contested, but he had guys all over him, still drained the shot. Then he sunk the bucket for the and one. Central wins the game, gets revenge on revenge, redemption, whatever you want to call it, on Bryant.
Yeah, pretty incredible for Bryant to win, was it 27 straight games?
They 26, won? Yeah.
26. To beat Central twice. Conference championship, but can't win the state title. It's almost just like it was too much to do all of that. And, you know, Central is a great team. I talked about it on Jonesboro Radio and on Friday, and Bud Schropel, he's seen both these teams extensively covering Jonesboro and the Central, and he said, I just don't think Bryant can beat him again. And I told him, I said, I agree with you on that, because Central is too good and well coached. We talked about, you know, earlier on this episode about, you know, Clay Reeves seeing Valonia. You not only have one tape, but you have two tapes, and those games were close and came down to the end. So it wasn't like there was anything that really needed to be, I think, majorly contoured. The first game, it came down to the last possession, and they bottled up Honor Boateng at the end. And I think they said he dribbled it off his leg. Then there was some dispute on whether there was a foul there or not. But it's the last possession. Similar game at Bryant. Gets a little chippy in the game there. There was some back and forth. And so you have two games that are very close, and they're not intimidated of Bryant. I mean, they lost to him twice, but it wasn't like they were two blowouts. They felt like they should have won those two games, right? Like they felt like they could have and should have, and Bryant won them. And so they go into that third game with a big chip on their shoulder saying, you stole two games from us. We feel like we could have won those. We'll win the game that counts. And that's what they did. And it's, I mean, you almost wonder if you're Bryant, maybe you'd been better to drop one of those, you know, but they're glad they won those and won a conference title. I think and that streak was huge. They talked about that in the press conference, Coach A did, but you know, at the end of the day, they'd love to win a state title, and they've come close twice now and couldn't do it. But that team is going to be loaded again, and I think more loaded than Central will be with Boateng leaving. There's some, you know, I saw that Kellen Robinson was named the 6A Central Player of the Year. He won that over Boateng. So that's pretty big, and he'll be back. So, yeah. And they've got some young guys coming in, a lot of guys returning. So it'll be interesting to see if Coach A can get that elusive state title next year. You could just sense, and you were in that press conference, I was in there with you, just a maybe an air of frustration or just disappointment disappointment. Yep. Probably disappointment is the better, not frustration, disappointment that, you know, we had a really great season, but it would be, if we could have just celebrated a win here, that's the capper. I mean, we had a tremendous season. And he said that when they have some time to step back, they'll be able to appreciate the conference title, sweeping Central, and all that, and the win streak. But Friday night was very heartbreaking that, you know, you couldn't finish off that year celebrating a title. I know the entire town of Bryant, you know, I live here, was really excited about it. And, you know, so you've got to wait another year to do that. But Brian Ross at Central is a good coach. Boateng is a great player. You know, SB Live thought he should have been a McDonald's All-American. He did not have as good a game as I thought he would have. I mean, I think he had 12 or 14 points in the game. Thought he might more likely to have 25 or something in a game like this, but he didn't have to. The other guys stepped up for him. He played well enough. But inside, they were dominant too. And that's something that, you know, Brian doesn't really have a dominant post player. So they do a lot of rebounding with their guards. But I did think that that was one of the differences in the game was the post defense and interior, the physicality that with some block shots and things. But kudos to both those teams. They're both good teams. That was entertaining. You know, I was able to attend that. And the crowds for both games. I don't know if you saw this. Did you see the both cheerleading groups competing against each
yes,
other?
Yes, I did. Right, I did.
And they were really getting after it. You know, each one would take a turn doing flips and things. And I turned to one of the guys that's sitting next to me, and I said, "This reminds me of that movie, Bring It On." You know, yeah. Where the cheerleaders get into some fisticuffs. So are we going to have a little bit of a showdown at center court here? And if you, I don't know if you saw this clip, this is going off on a little bit of a tangent, but in Oregon, in one of the state finals, the cheerleaders were doing backflips when guys were being introduced and going on the court. And one of the cheerleaders hit one of the starters in the head.
Yeah. Knocked him out. Yeah.
Knocked him out of the game. But we were talking about on our conference call today, you know, we've got several people in Oregon. That's one of our hubs. And our vice president that was leading the call said that the cheerleaders nearly hit every starter doing that. They were doing like a flip. And so like they almost all got hit.
Yeah.
But then finally that, so this was safe here, but it did look like, you know, there was a little tension going on between, but that's the kind of game, that's kind of the student sections were getting after it. It was a good atmosphere for high school basketball.
Yeah. And on the bronze side, I mentioned about Kellen Robinson there. He led, I actually think he led all scorers with 22 points and had also 3 rebounds and 2 steals. Then the second leading scorer was Kamarian Bede, CB as they call him, who is one of their returning players along with Kellen next year. You think about CB returning, RJ Young. I know Trent Ford was another one that's done some good things for him, and they get a lot back, as you said. So it's hard to think that they won't be the favorite for Class 7A next year. And maybe Harbor is what, kind of depends on what, if Cortland Muldrew stays or not, or maybe goes the prep school route. I don't know what he's doing either way, but got to throw Harbor in there, but Bryant definitely will be up there at the top as a state title contender. And I almost said Benton, and I will go ahead and say them now, because that, man, it's just like Bryant, Nate. I know that was a really disappointing finish for Benton. You think about the fact that the Panthers were leading 35-21 with 2:35 left in the second quarter. And then really that was kind of when Pine Bluff began to make a little bit of a comeback. And it was just a 5-point game at halftime. And then I think Benton, I don't have this part in front of me, I think Benton led by 2 points going into the fourth quarter. And then, you know, Pine Bluff just really turned it on. Courtney Crutchfield, he got another MVP for the, I think that's, was that back-to-back. I think he got it last year, if I'm not mistaken. But
the
Missouri signee, the Missouri football signee, he was earned the most 5A state tournament most valuable player in the game. He finished with 24 points, which of course was a game high. Actually, Terrion Burgess had a game high 27, but Courtney had 24 points. Also was 12 of 16 from the free throw line, 7 rebounds and 6 steals. Darion Graydon had 14 points as well, was in double figures. Then Braylon Hall and Jamal Hickman had 12 each for the Z's. Then on this, the Benton Panthers side, as I mentioned, Terrion Burgess, 27 points, also 8 rebounds in the game. Harrison Pickett, want to give a shout out to this young man. He was exceptional. And Nate, it's always hard to see the losing team, but I assume it was his father, but there was a man holding him up because he was just so broken over it. And when you watch just how good he was in this game, not just putting 21 points on the board, but what he did, he had 7 rebounds as well. It just seemed like he was all over the place. So Harrison Pickett really impressed with what he's another one that's coming back next year. And Benton will have plenty coming back. So Pine Bluff, definitely, they're the team that's going to graduate a lot. Kind of like with Central and Bryant, Pine Bluff is going to graduate a good bit, just like Central is. So, you know, I feel like that it could be another really, really strong year. I know that it was pointing for these two Saline County teams, Benton and Bryant, but it could be a really, really big turnaround, completely opposite of what they experienced this year, maybe this time next season.
Yeah, and you'd probably have to say there'll be a favorite to win 5A next year. I talked to several people in Saline County, very disappointed that one of the teams couldn't win it. But Pine Bluff, well coached with Billy Dixon, and I talked about this on Jonesboro Radio too. Budrow, he picked Pine Bluff in this game, and I kind of agreed with him on that. You know, Crutchfield didn't play much at all in the first two losses to them. They were still pretty close games. He was injured, and he's a real X factor. And they're well coached, good athletes, all around, and guys that aren't going to get rattled if they're down 14, you know. And I think that's that when they made their comeback, that was really kind of evident on who'd been there before. In the fourth quarter, you could tell the team that had been there, that had been in that situation. I mean, you talk about Crutchfield, a guy who is a Division I football prospect who has played in the football playoffs and played a lot of big games, and just an unflappable guy, a guy who hits a 35-foot shot to send a game. Their season was almost over. And hits a shot against Lake Hamilton and probably one of the better basketball games that's ever been played in state history in the playoffs against Lake Hamilton. So, you know, Pine Bluff, you got to give it to them. They were on the ropes, and they, you know, they showed a lot of moxie to get back in it. But I just think when the game was close, they were more comfortable than Benton was. And, you know, I think Crutchfield was a little more comfortable than Burgess, even though Burgess had a big game. I think when it got down to crunch time, you know, we saw who was the more comfortable team.
So that was Pine Bluff's 15th all-time state championship, of course, 16th or second consecutive in a 68-63 win over the Benton Panthers. Next one down in 4A. There's really not much more to say in this other than Little Rock Christian executed their game plan. It was let Lane Taylor do his thing. They knew that he was going to. There was no question about it, but you wanted to shut down the rest of the players. And that's exactly essentially what Coach Kyle Pennington had said, and it resulted in a 71-56 win for Little Rock Christian to win their second straight state title. So just looking at the team, looking at the stats here, Lane Taylor, again, an absolutely just unbelievable performance. Now, he put up 33 shots, but he connected on 48% of them. So pretty good night there, I would say, for him. Also had 4 rebounds in the game. And then the closest score after that was Jackson Berry with 8 points. So definitely an incredible defensive job there by Little Rock Christian. They executed that game plan to perfection. J.J. Andrews, 19 points on 7 of 13 shooting. This was on his birthday. Jeff Halpern did a really good story on that. His 16th birthday. Yep. Also won the 4A State Tournament MVP, had 8 rebounds and 3 assists. Jamil Wesley had a really, really good first half. I'll tell you what, Nate, that's a steal that Henderson State got with Jamil Wesley. And also Landron Blocker, who I think is also a steal for Louisiana Tech. He sent the house down a couple of different times last year. I think he did it 3 times this year with some thunderous dunks.
Leg dunk at the end was
yes. 10. 10. Yeah, absolutely. It was a 10. A 10. I can't say what Billy Bob said on Varsity Blues, but a 10, no doubt. And I'm
Billy
pretty
Bob,
good, isn't
Billy
it?
Bob reference. How about that?
Yeah, exactly. I'll say the G-rated version. Of course, there's a lot of kids that are listening to this probably that don't know who Billy Bob is on Varsity Blues, but not old enough to watch that quite yet. But
Google it, kids. Google it.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great movie. Great movie. But Google it. And Landry Blocker had 21 on 8 of 12 shooting, had a double-double, 11 rebounds as well, and then had two steals. So just another – I'll tell you what, Nate, the performances from Little Rock Christian, both you. Last year, you didn't expect it. You thought that Blyville was probably going to be the state champion throughout most of the year. This year, they were the hunted, didn't faze them a bit. They played lights out on this stage the past 2 years in Hot Springs, did Little Rock Christian.
Well, here's my couple takeaways from this. One, and there was some news that broke at the end of the game, too. I wanted to mention this. But one, Lane Taylor is a major Division I basketball player. I don't care what anybody says. Yep. He proved it that night. The guy is thick, body. He can shoot it. He can move. I think he's quick enough. His shot is so pure. I mean, if you watch that guy, you wouldn't have thought – I mean, nothing against North Texas, but, I mean, it's 2 inches or three that are separating him from being at a Conference USA or American Conference school to being, you know, in a major Power Five league. I think he's going to go down there and be gangbusters and possibly have a chance to hit the portal and go somewhere else. I mean, I think that's what some bigger schools are looking for, but – I'm also sort of mystified that UALR and Arkansas State, that there's not, you know, I don't know how much interest there was, but maybe there was and he didn't want to go there. But, man, he is the real deal. When you play like that against those guys, and I think Kyle Pennington said, we didn't think that the other guys could beat us, so we were going to let him have 40, and then we knew that they weren't going to be able to do it. They had 18 combined, the rest of them. So that was their game plan. Let him score some and make them score at certain points, and they weren't able to do it. The other thing that, two other things. One other guy that's undersold is Blocker. Nothing against La Tech. Feel like he is a Power Five guy. You're not going to find a better finisher probably around in high school basketball than him. He finishes on the break well. I think he's very similar to his brother. I'm not sure why, what happened there, but La Tech getting a steal too. And then the big news of the night that was probably lost a little bit in the shuffle was one of the questions that Jeff Halpern asked JJ Andrews on that sidebar is, are you going to follow Leighton Blocker and go to an academy? Are you going to come back? Definitely come back to Little Rock Christian, he says. So, we believe that and sometimes things change, but, it sounds like it's something that a question it was not unexpected from him. He resoundingly said, I'm going to return. They will move to 5A. He should get some more competition there, but you know, you kind of wondered, you know, when you're in that 4A and they did lose at Clinton this year, but they pretty much rolled through that. And you wondered, is that something that he's going to be content with, or would he like to go up against players from national programs that he's going to see in college? No question. He's going to be highly recruited no matter where he goes. The 18th ranked player in the nation, per ESPN, but in the 26th class, but some guys want to go to the prep school and play in big tournaments and travel and all that. I kind of suspect that that's what he would say, because I know he is so rooted in his family. His dad, Sean, a wonderful person who played in the NFL, started Arkansas in football. I knew he's very close to his family. He's got a little brother there. So it sounds like he's going to be back, and that guy's going to be highly recruited. Hey, one thing I wanted your opinion on. So I said on Jonesboro Radio that I think he is the best young player, the most developed I've seen at 14. And maybe you need to clarify physically developed. I also think his skills are developed. But when you're talking about 14 years old last year as a freshman, he was 6'3", 185. Now I think he's more like 6'5", 6'6", something like that. As a 15-year-old, he played the whole year this year at 15. I can't think of anybody else. And, you know, the choir in Northeast Arkansas said Malik Monk, but, you know, I don't know.
That's the other one that I would think of.
Yeah, but Malik Monk is 6'3", 185 right now as an NBA player.
Yeah.
And that's his. I went back and looked at what he weighs and his dimensions are now. I mean, J.J. Andrews could end up being 6'7", 6'8".
Yeah, if you're talking about physical development, absolutely.
Well, I'm kind of talking about everything.
Yeah.
Physical and just skills. You know, but, yeah. But definitely physical. When you look at that guy, he looks like a grown man and he's only just turned 16 years old.
Yeah. No, I mean, I tend to agree. I mean, I first heard about Malik Monk when he was 9 years old. I didn't hear about JJ. Now that doesn't mean anything. I'm just saying I followed Malik earlier than I started following JJ around. I think he was 12. He was like in seventh, eighth grade, something like seventh grade. So man, I knew who Malik Monk was when he was in third grade. So it was just a little bit longer. Physical, there's no question, JJ. I mean, the skills are certainly up for debate, I would think. But yeah, I mean, it's those two. I think that the argument starts with those two, and it's not even close.
Well, I look at him, and I think NBA. I mean, I just think major college, one and done NBA. And, you know, not to go too deep into this, but I don't know what Malik Monk's grades were, but this guy is one of the scholar athletes of 4A that you know, PBS picked him as their scholar athlete, 3.7 GPA. And I want to say that, you know, that might be a more underrated intangible in a guy is the intelligence, because I think his intelligence and his maturity is even more striking to me than his physical appearance.
Well, and I've said it a million times. I was just going to add here. I've said a million times. I think what one of the things that makes Lane Taylor so great is his intelligence of the game.
Yeah, yeah, his basketball IQ. And there's basketball IQ, and there's intelligence, and then some guys have all that. But you know, the way JJ carries himself, you can tell his dad was a professional athlete because he's very comfortable in the spotlight and articulate. I see the total package there, and that's something I hadn't seen. Now, I did not get an up-close look at Malik Monk. That was kind of a time where I wasn't actively, you know, just watching every high school basketball game there was. But I do know some of the games I did see him play in, he did not wow me in. Some of the bigger games in Bentonville, you know, when I watched him. So we'll see how JJ progresses the next 2 years and what happens as far as McDonald's All-American mentions and things. I think that's all stuff that's within his grasp, but it strikes me that at this young of an age, he is this developed physically and his skills are very good too. And I just think that the future is super bright for this guy, a guy who's got his priorities intact and a guy who's already won two state titles.
And then down in Class 3A, I was itching to talk about this one. Central Arkansas Christian gets their first state title in school history in a 57-47 win over Bergman. Definitely heartbreaking for Bergman. Nate, you think about the ending last year. That was the last high school basketball game in Arkansas. It ended in overtime. Manila took home the state championship. Dylan Friend is somebody who has just absolutely gone off in this game. He scored over 50 combined points the last 2 years, had 28 in the 23 finals, and then he had 24 to lead all scores on Thursday. And then he was the only one in double figures for Bergman. But what was really interesting for CAC to me, I was concerned whenever Grayson Wilson got in first half foul trouble. I think it was Deuce Williams, and there was one more. Maybe it was Jacob Henry. I can't remember, but I know Deuce Williams and Grayson Wilson both got in foul trouble, which is not a recipe for success for what CAC does. But that's the deal. That's why this team is here. They had guys step up that you maybe didn't expect. Lane Baxter was one. So Sam Maddox got the sharpshooter. I've called him the sharpshooter for a long time because that's what he is. And he's not just great at shooting. He's good in other areas, but that's kind of what he's known for. But he got the MVP 16 points, had two steals, a couple rebounds, I think it was four or five rebounds as well. But Lane Baxter also matched him with 16 points. And I had a chance to talk to a lot of these guys when I went over to CAC about 2 months ago to get some stuff for this big story I did on Grayson. And I really like this Lane Baxter kid. He's a jokester, but you know, when the lights are on, he turns it on when he needs to. And that's exactly what he did on the biggest stage. I mean, they don't win this game without him. There's no question about it. He was 4 of 9 from three. Maddox was 4 of 7. But he was just such a big part. You know, I know that Webb Watson, who is the Memphis signee for Memphis baseball signee, he took a charge that was really critical. I think there was another guy in there that took a late charge that was extremely critical. So they just did those little things CAC did. And whenever other guys got in foul trouble, other ones stepped up, and it resulted in their first state title in school history.
Maddox, obviously a star on that team, but really just a bunch of guys that bring that lunch pail, some football players in there with Henry and Deuce Williams, and his dad played in the NFL too. Grayson Wilson, yep. A quarterback, 4-star. So just guys that on the basketball court maybe don't stand out as much as they do on the football field, but they know what to do, their role to win. You know, Wilson scores the game-winning basket to get to the finals courtesy of Maddox, you know, shoveling it off to him on a rebound. So they played really well together. Not flashy, not going to really wow you. Maddox is a quiet star, but know what to do to win and well-coached. And I know they're proud. You're proud. Everybody associated with that program, because it's known as a football school.
Well, baseball and a little bit of football. But I was talking with Hayden Cruz, the athletic director. You know, Hayden and I went to school together. He's older than me. I'll go ahead and point that out. But I was talking to him. I said, man, I think we've got a state championship in every sport. The only one that I think we don't is volleyball. I know we've never won one in volleyball, but I think now – they've got a state championship. And now, of course, you know, we paid for them because we're a private school and we recruit and all that stuff. So, I mean, I guess you got to put an asterisk next to it. I'm just kidding.
Somebody
guys, come
turn
on.
Turn his microphone off.
I got to throw something in. It's all in good fun. I know some people are going to actually take offense
right now.
But no, big congrats to Matt Hall and those guys. Definitely. I guess I can say a long time coming. CAC had made the semifinals 2 times before. So it was my junior year. I think I said on this show last week was one of those times. So really great to see from a personal standpoint, but also too, big props to Bo Martin. Great dude. You know, these Matt Hall and Bo Martin both grew up together. They're two great guys, upstanding gentlemen that I have a lot of respect for and great friends for a long time. And Bo's built a great program there at Bergman. You know, two straight state finals appearances. And look, that's a basketball school. They're going to be there again. There's no question about it. So,
hey, and one more thing. Sorry to cut you off, but
Friend, go ahead.
Friend can play. Friend.
Yes. Dude, and he'll be back too. Friend's a dog, man. He can play.
He's a dog, and he's a guy that doesn't, he's unconscious from outside. He'll shoot it wherever he is on the floor. And I really enjoy watching guys. That's a guy that he's in the gym when it's 100 degrees, shooting up 500 shots a day. Boom, 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 three, three, three. All day long. You can see it. That tremendous. I don't know, you know, his size may prevent him from playing at a higher level college basketball. Surely there's a home for him somewhere in NAIA Division II, but very entertaining to watch him. Love watching guys that can shoot the basketball. He can flat out shoot it, can flat out play. Congratulations to him. You know, he kept them in the ball game really single-handedly. He's got one more year, correct?
Senior year.
Maybe get a little more physical and a little bit stronger. Maybe you've got a Division II player there.
Yeah. Then down in Class 2A, probably the most impressive run of all 12 teams, girls and boys, and the state finals. East Poinsett County, they take down Marshall 68-61. Now, Nate, we had talked about last week, a lot of these guys, Dennis, familiar names. Dennis Gaines, Jacob Gaines was just a sophomore, so he contributed to the football team that went to the state finals, but not as known as his big brother. Also, Tyrus Real. There were multiple guys that contributed to that state finals football team. So, you know, Coach Harston, he didn't get his his team, or you know what, I think Coach Harston is it Jamal Thaxton, I believe is his name. Coach Thaxton didn't get his guys until after the football season, like in mid-December. So, you know, they got on a run and really began to heat up. And actually Marshall was starting to, you know, last year Marshall went into the fourth quarter with Bigelow 38-38. And I believe it was a 19-1 run that Bigelow went on just to run away with it in the fourth. Marshall got really hot there in the third quarter. They took a 6-point lead into the fourth, but I just didn't feel like it was safe. A, because of what happened last year, I just didn't feel very comfortable with it, but also because this EPC team, regardless of what has been thrown at them, they have just continued to answer the call. And they did that again to win, I believe it was their first state title since 2012 and their first appearance since 2016. Jacob Gaines, who I had mentioned just a second ago, he got the 2A state finals or state tournament MVP. He finished with 22 points, which was a game high. I keep going to the split box and that doesn't show the same thing here, or doesn't show the full stat line. So 22 points, 9 rebounds. So just missed a double double, and then 2 steals for Jacob. His brother Dennis, who had the first 10 points, the UCA football signee, first 10 points of the game, 13 points, and then 8 rebounds along with 2 steals. And then Tyrus Real with 13 points was also in double figures. And then Omar McCustin, another really strong two-way performer on that football team. Great receiver, great defensive back, chipped in with 11. And then for Marshall, Peyton DePriest, who, man, Peyton DePriest is a good player, Nate. Super athletic. I think he averaged like 30 points per game this year. He led Marshall with 17 points that included 2 really big dunks. Bryce Griffin had 12. So they had 4 in double figures, did the Bobcats. Cole Harness with 13, and then Dylan Tyler with 14. So kind of like with Bergman, I don't know that Bergman quite let the game slip away from him the way that Marshall has in the past 2 years, but just extremely heartbreaking. It's hard enough to get to the state finals once. It's even harder to get there twice, and it's even more brutal when you have 2 losses led back to back like Marshall has.
I was really happy for the younger Gaines, because you have to hear for years now how good your brother is in football, and rightfully so. We've mentioned his name many, many times. One of the better running backs we've seen as far as stat wise. He was one of the top rushers in the country, and going to UCA. So you hear all that and you're his little brother. Well, then you go to basketball and you're the MVP. He had a good game. Dennis had a good game, you know, starting off, but younger brother is the MVP, and got to feel good for him though. That, and that whole family, what about their parents and family? You got 2 guys there that are super connected to the success in football and basketball. And I know Dennis was probably happy for his little brother too, you know, to win that. And I was also impressed the big guy inside. You remember his name?
He had a big third quarter. I think it was Doug Real.
Okay.
Doug Real, yeah.
Carries quite a bit of weight very well on the basketball court. A big dude, an offensive lineman-looking type guy that made some big plays for him in there.
Yeah, it was the fourth quarter. I'm sorry. Yeah, in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, he really stood out to me. Light feet, you know, a guy that you could tell probably was a very good football player, an offensive lineman type, playing a little bit of basketball, looks a little bit out of place on the basketball court, but then he gets it out there and he starts making some plays, and his conditioning is maybe a little better than you think it is too. And you got to give it to Thaxton. You can tell he's a, you know, in his early on in his career there, but they all rallied around him, and to get those guys as late as he did, they were the 5th seed in the conference district tournament. And to make that run says a lot about him. It says a lot about the players and their conditioning. And I think, too, when you're on a good football team like that, that wins a state or goes to a state championship game, you know what it takes to win, you know. And even though they were kind of up against the 8-ball in basketball, the cream rose to the top. And those guys got into, you know, they got their sea legs under them around January, took a few lumps, but then they got it going. And you could tell all the Gaines boys and the other guys that play football, they're all great athletes, and they they came together at the right time. You know, as we've said many times on this show, make it to the tournament. That's a prime example there. Made it to the tournament, played their best games in March, and here they go for another title at a school that is a very good basketball, has a very good basketball tradition.
And another school that has a good basketball tradition that won their first state title in over two decades after coming up short last year. Mark Tree, 66-43 over a Nevada team that nobody really expected to be here. So got to give it to Nevada for the run that they made. Definitely. I mean, I certainly didn't have them. I'll be honest. I didn't have them on our radar before the season, but we had said time and time again, I said it in the previews. I said it up to last week. There is probably no team that is more motivated to get back and win a state championship than this Mark Tree team. And they've got a lot coming back next year too. Ladarius Brown, who had just a breakout game, pretty much dominated from start to finish, won the 1A tournament MVP in the 63-43 victory. Ladarius had 20 points on 7 of 14 shooting, also 6 rebounds and 4 steals. Kenyon Carter and Jonah Walker also added 10. Then for Nevada, no shocker here, Bryson Harris had 14, along with Kavion Coleman. They led the team, the Blue Jays, with 14 apiece. But, you know, Nate, I know that I think it was kind of more so in the second half and really in the third or the fourth quarter whenever Mark Tree had a big fourth quarter. I was thinking that Nevada had had a pretty big one after Mark Tree had let off the brakes, but it was actually Mark Tree outscoring Nevada in that fourth quarter. But it really from the beginning, I mean, you could tell that I think that Mark Tree was a step or two ahead, just their depth. Again, their motivation, not to say anything bad about Jamario Bell. He's a young coach. He's still in his 20s. He's facing against Coach Barbara Wilmer Covington, which Jeff Halpern did a great story over her. And what, man, I said this on Facebook, but her story needs to be national for as long as she is coached.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that.
Yes, most definitely. But it's also, too, you got to think about, I think that they were a little bit deeper, Mark Tree was. But again, you know, I think Jamario Bell, again, hats off to him for getting them to this point. But you're facing a coach that's got about three decades of experience, which also probably played a part as well.
Yeah, you know, she kind of reminded me. I always thought that Pat Summitt could coach guys. You know, she never got a chance to, but see a lot of her in Coach Covington, Wilburn Covington, an intense person who is an old school defensive coach. I mean, they play defense, and that's really what won them the game. They buy into that. You know, you've got good athletes. Those guys are football players too, right? Mark Tree, good.
Oh, football. Yeah. Ken Carter's their quarterback. Ladarius Brown, I think, is a receiver.
You got guys playing more than one sport over there. They did a good job in football this year. And so she knows they're athletic, hard-nosed, and tough guys. She can demand that real high intensity defensive effort. And that, you know, that travels too. That's going to be with you in a gym in January on the road or at home or in the bright lights of Hot Springs. Defense travels. It traveled again that day. And let's just say this about Coach Wilburn Covington. Agree with you. That should be a national story. And I think SB Live Sports made it a national story with our network. Got a ton of hits. It was on our national homepage. It was picked up by some wire services. It does amaze me that she's been there that long. It's almost kind of like people have taken it for granted. But you talk about a person who, a coach who is in a male dominated profession. I mean, she's coaching guys, but I just think because she is so good, professional, successful, it just, you know, and she's been there for 30 years that it just doesn't get brought up much because, you know, they kind of take it for granted that she's been there and done it. But when you bring that story out to the national audience and you hear the particulars of all the championships she's been to, and now this is her second title, and the size of Mark Tree, how small it is. She revealed, you know, in the Arkansas PBF halftime show package that she didn't even know where Mark Tree was when she left Arkansas State. Good player at Arkansas State, from Forest City, goes there and finds a great deal of comfort in a small town. And you can tell by some of the interviews and comments, she's very well revered in that town, and I think there's a reason why she's never left. But it's a tremendous story, and she's a good coach, a very good coach, and you could see it in that game, very well illustrated how well she coached in that game.
Yeah, no, that was my thing too. I felt like last year, even though they lost the game, and I'm not saying by us, I'm just saying in general, that I felt like her story should have been put out a little bit more. Not that people haven't, I mean, this has been news in NEA for many, many years, but I don't think that a lot of people, especially since they hadn't been to the finals in over 20 years, it really just wasn't well known around the state. But that is a super, see, because it's one of those things, it's like if I was ever a coach, I couldn't coach boys. I would lose my mind. I would have to coach girls. Like, I'm a girl dad. I'm used to girls. I can deal with mood swings a lot better than I can smart aleckness. I just can't handle that kind of stuff. But that's the thing. She knows exactly. She's like that mama to him. You know, she just knows how to handle this. She knows how to handle boys, and she knows how to get their attention, and she demands their respect.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that tough love kind of thing where they know she cares about them. You saw the hug with Carter, I think it was, after the game.
Yep.
There's a tremendous amount of love and respect there. And, you know, you can get on kids. You know, there's no question that kids are resilient, and you can get on them. You can demand a lot from them, but they're always going to give you more when they know you care about them, you know, and you can tell she cares about everyone and those players, and she cares about everyone in that community. I mean, the respect is mutual. The community respects her, and she respects them and everybody at that school. And It's just a great story. It's a very unique and novel story. I thought Jeff Halpern, you know, told it pretty well. And it's really amazing that she's been there that long. But they, you know, even though they hadn't won a title for a while, they've always been good. And they've been to the title game. You know, they were in the title game last year. I think she's always going to be in the mix there, you know, as long as she's there. But a Hall of Fame quality career, and she just added to it again over the weekend.
That's right, no doubt about it. Well, that will do it for at least the podcast. We still got the final rankings coming out this week. We've got our All-State list to release, but that will do it for at least podcast coverage. Nate, I guess, I'll let you. I know you got something else to say, but
I've got one more thing, and I want you to chime in on this.
Yeah,
I don't think we ever did say anything about Kevin Miller, but you know, Kevin.
Yes.
Kevin passed away, and I want to give you the floor here in a second, but because you're a great friend of his. But Kevin, 43 years old, passed away unexpectedly. A guy who was a champion, particularly for basketball players, but many other athletes in Arkansas. A guy that earned a great deal of respect from the media just because of his consistency of always being out there with his camera and trying to get highlights of kids and get them some exposure. And the funeral was yesterday in West Helena. I know you went to that. So I just wanted to take a moment here to express our extreme condolences, heartfelt condolences to the family and to the basketball community. We will miss Kevin as a professional. I know you will miss him as a friend. So
yeah,
I just wanted to tell everybody that we were heartbroken right along with them. The SB Live team has grown accustomed to seeing Kevin at the games, and it's not going to be the same without him.
No, there's no question. And I think that I had a chance to go to his funeral, and I mean, it was an unbelievable turnout, at least from the Helena people, but they had some from Little Rock, but there was not a seat left in the house. I mean, it was, and they made a lot of great points. Just about how I think there was an analogy made because he loved to fish. There was an analogy made about how he caught a lot of fish, and she was talking about all the people in that room. There was hundreds of people in that sanctuary. Like I said, not a seat. They had extra seats. And I think that is a great example of just a life well lived. Just the fact that there were so many people that took time out of a Sunday to go there. I mean, there was no question. This is my busiest weekend of the year. I mean, my busiest weekend of the year, but there was no question that I was going to be there to support his family. Just no question whatsoever. But yeah, you're right. I mean, we're going to miss him forever. In his memory, I promise you, we're going to make sure his memory lives on. But nonetheless, basketball especially won't be the same. And I thought a lot about him over the state tournament weekend. It was extremely humbling for me. I don't think that this put to me purpose or anything, but they had a seat reserved to him right next to where I was sitting on Friday. So that was really cool to experience that. And I really appreciated that gesture by Banco ZK, by the AAA, all those guys. I don't know whose idea it was, but I certainly appreciated whoever. He was a best friend to me. We obviously did some work together in sports, but yeah, we're definitely one of my closest friends, and still kind of in shell shock, to be honest with you. I'm not really someone that I shouldn't say I don't deal with pain well, but or with death well, but you know, seeing somebody in a box as your last image is really tough. I'm glad I saw him yesterday. You know, I'm glad that I got to see him one last time. So
he lived his life with a lot of zest and passion. You talk about the fishing. He was telling me at Bryant in early January about how he covered a tournament up there, you know, the Bad Boy Mowers tournament, and stayed at a resort. And then the organizers gave him fishing tackle to fish with. And it just tickled him so much. So you're going to miss that. I think this is another reminder. And this is to go off things a little bit. In my circle of people that I know, I mean, just Steve Andrews, who is a major contributor for our company, just lost his wife from cancer today. Tomorrow is not promised, everybody. It's not promised. And, you know, the one thing that probably, you know, Kevin and his family take some, solace in is that the guy was always in a good mood. We saw him and had a zest for life, and he was living it like you're supposed to, like it's your last day. And he didn't know it was going to be his last day, but lived life with a lot of passion. I think that's all we can do, because we don't know when the end is coming. And I've been painfully reminded this year about how precious life is. And not to go off on this tangent, but I do think it's a reminder again with Kevin that anything can happen, and we'll miss him a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't have that in my notes. I completely forgot to even bring that up. But that will be it for at least the podcast. I was mentioning a second ago, the podcast version of basketball this year. Ness, we'll see you in August, because we're going to be Jared will be taking over with me for softball, and then also with me for baseball, Kevin will be. But man, but August will be here before we know it. So
it will be.
Definitely make sure and check it.
I was going to say, you got a lot of good baseball and softball, and then be ready for football.
That's right. So you can check it out, scorebooklive.com/Arkansas, the podcast, the video version on there, and then also the audio on Spotify, and we'll have our weekly note. I'm not sure that I'm going to have the notebook for softball this week. I think that's going to probably start next week, so I can catch up on everything, but we're going to have those each week for baseball and softball. Of course, the Super 7 rankings and the podcast for both the episodes of softball and baseball. But that will do it for this episode 114, I believe, of Arkansas Prep Extra. Again, scorebooklive.com/Arkansas or in the SB Live app in the palm of your hand. For all of us here at SB Live and Nate Olson, my name is Kyle Sutherland. We will catch you next week.